The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Monday, April 10th, 2017. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. In fact, all that is not true. In fact, this show is sort of a vacation show. No, it is a vacation show. We're on vacation, but it's all new material to you. Unless, of course, you had joined us live at the Bell House, New York, this past Saturday. And you heard Janine Garofalo, Matt Taibbi.
Assuming all of this is still applicable. I mean, I'm recording it on Friday.
Talking about whatever we talked about on that day. So it is a first time we've done a live Majority Report podcast, and it was great, I think. Or it was really uncomfortable and did not work out well. So I don't know. One of those two things happened, ladies and gentlemen. And I wish you could have been there either way. Because some people like to see things that don't work out. Sometimes people like that. So Matt Taibbi, Janine Garofalo, and at least the plan is to talk about what, you know, how we're back to a very similar scene that we were in the yesteryears. But I hope you enjoy the meal, and the meal of entertainment that we have for you. And then also stick around for members after the show. Matt has pulled a deep archive from the original Majority Report, which was a radio show, of course, back on Air America back in the day. And if you want to become a member, you just go to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member. You'll get full access to the archives of this current show, which there's 1,500 plus, I think, podcasts. You get the full archive. You searchable on your Majority Report app, and you also get access when we do these vacation shows to deep archives of amazing guests that we had through the years, including, and maybe one of them will be on today, like George Carlin. We talked to Robert Altman. We talked to Gore Vidal, Eddie Vedder. We talked to, I mean, I don't know, the whole range of people. Gary Hart, I don't know why that pops in my mind, but we had an interesting interview with him. Michael Moore from the DNC. I mean, we I don't know, a whole range of just incredibly different guests. So, and Matt digs into the archives and pulls them out. That's what you get. So not all shows are created equal. And you know what? Not all ingredients are either. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from. Thankfully, for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers delicious, quality food courtesy of over 150 local farms, fisheries, ranchers across the U.S. right to your door, supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients. Let me tell you what is going through my mind right now, honestly, as I'm reading this. You know, I've got a copy I'm supposed to be reading. But what I am thinking of, because I think if you've listened to the show before, you know that I'm actually a customer of Blue Apron. Fact, I mean, don't tell them this, because they gave me two free meals to try out. I was already a customer before we got this, but don't tell them that. And I'm literally reading this, and I'll tell you exactly what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the meal that I had two nights ago. It's now Friday. It was Wednesday night, because we get it on Wednesday and Thursdays. We more often than not make it on Wednesday and Thursday. It's not even mentioned in the meals coming up in April. It was a Korean dish with like these big medallions of Korean pasta with like a pork, like, you know, pork granulated pork. I don't know how you call it. Like I don't even know how to do it, but it was
shredded pork.
Not shredded, but ground pork. It was delicious to the point where literally I'm reading this and that's all I'm still thinking about more than 36 hours later. And it was super easy to cook. I mean, it took about, 35 minutes, like all told. And they give you all the ingredients. You put it together. You make a great home cooked meal. The kids love it. Sometimes not as much as I would like, you know, these days, because my daughter doesn't do anything I ask her to do. But the kids get involved with it. Saul will cut up stuff. Some of the meals available in April include spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata. Sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. That's already making my mouth water. Parmesan crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. Baby broccoli, fontina paninis with a hard-boiled egg and arugula salad. I mean, that Korean dish alone, I'm going to be looking for that. You know, fortunately, I live in New York. I can go, you know, when we go out, that's something. Now, like, I never even knew they had pasta like that. Or, you know, it's noodles. It's big noodles. But I've never had that dish, and it was delicious. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/majority. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/majority. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Also, an advertiser we've been having for a while, actually, now, because it goes back to even, I remember this back when, just after I hired new Matt and Kelly. We don't even call new Matt anymore, practically. We just call him Matt. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? You know, posting your job in one place is not enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. Now you can. ZipRecruiter already has 9 million resumes you can search through in their database. You can add multiple people to your account if you have multiple people in your business that are helping you hire. You can post up to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter. And their handy website shows trending career fields and searches. You can find candidates in any city, industry, or nationwide. No juggling emails or calls to your office. They get a great interface where you can sort out applicants, write notes, favorite some people, bring them back for another interview, or however you want to go about it. You can find out today why ZipRecruiter has been featured in Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, New York Times, TechCrunch, and CBS, and why it's been used by over 1 million businesses. Right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. One more time, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And you know what I always say? The best time to look for candidates for your job is when you don't have to fill it. So you're not in a panic. Check it out. All right, folks, quick musical break. Then the live show that took place at the Bell House on April 8th in New York City. Well, Brooklyn. No, which is part of New York City. All right, enjoy.
Let's give a slow clap into a big clap.
Let's build it up. I can't do it with the mic in my hand.
Start it. Slow sort of rumble. If you like news, if you like college radio, means college radio.
If you like listening to things.
Yeah, Sam Sanders' melodious voice. Then you're going to love. Put your hands together right now for the Majority Report.
Sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect?
your image.
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis Airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cena.
It is Saturday, April 8th, 2017. My name is Sam Cena. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Well, no, actually we're not broadcasting. We're live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Gowanus, Brooklyn, USA. Folks, we don't have too much time, so I'm not going to waste too much on the intro, but thank you so much for coming. This is unbelievable for all of us. Let me first start by introducing people who you probably already know. Ladies and gentlemen, the great soundboard master of the Majority Report, who doesn't have a soundboard today. It's Matt Leck! And sitting to Matt's left, the master of the video domain at the Majority Report, and we have no video today. Kelly Carey! And Michael Brooks.
Such a cuck.
We have... had to do that, or I would have really disappointed people. Because we do have limited time today, instead of thanking these guys at the end of the show, I just want to say that the show has grown so much in the past 5 or 6 years that we've done this iteration of it, and it is directly attributable to Michael's amazing impressions and comedy and awareness of politics. Kelly's taking over our video section and just growing our YouTube channel by percentages that I can't calculate.
At least triple.
At least triple. That's an easier way of doing it. A fraction. Nine-thirds, I would say. And Matt really efficiently getting the show together. You notice we don't have technical problems like we used to, and that's because of Matt.
Sorry.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I didn't realize
the
that.
Whole technical old picture Matt. Is radically improved.
Old Matt. Old Matt, please stand up and take a bow. Wow. Old Matt has been living in the woods for the past year. And is now come out for the first time, and wow! And in the audience are some of your favorite IMers and callers. Mindy is here somewhere. And we have folks who have driven from Canada and Pennsylvania and Vermont and Brooklyn. Thanks so much for joining us. It is obviously just, have we bombed anybody since yesterday? I can't. The pace of the news these days has been crazy. I just wanted to just start off, before we bring out our two amazing guests, who you already know who they are, but I will introduce them in a moment. But this was just too funny not to share with you folks. And if I can, here we go. So here is nothing, as you can see. Okay,
So this happened last night, and we thought we'd talk about it. Here you see, Sean Hannity has tweeted out, so many of you are asking about this. I do not, he's capitalized this, as you can see, know if surveillance and unmasking versus me occurred.
I think a lot of us don't know that.
Yeah, no, none of us know this.
Yeah.
If confirmed, I will sue all involved.
Major fucking deal.
Major deal. And then, a parody account of the Soviet...
The Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. This is the foreign minister of Russia. It's a parody account of Russia's foreign minister. The current foreign minister of Russia who performs that job now.
He writes back to Hannity, I know, DM me. And, of course, Sean Hannity DMs him. And it's a little small to see, but I'll tell you this. Hello, I saw your tweet. What do you know about surveillance against me? And Sergey responds, are you crazy? Do you think the deep state is reading your thoughts? Screw you, not funny. Hannity replies. And then, of course, you can see the laughter with tears emoji at the parody account.
How do you even add to that?
And it's been a tough couple of days for Sean on Twitter as someone dug up his old tweets, and it was not old Matt on the... Glad our arrogant president is enjoying his taxpayer-funded golf outing after announcing the U.S. should take military action against Syria. Sadly for him, that was from September 3, 2013. And someone pointed out underneath, I bet you're wishing you wrote Obama somewhere in this tweet.
Every time you bomb somebody in the Islamic faith, you go golfing afterwards. It's a mini Hajj. Wow, what car?
Coincidentally, also true if you're Donald Trump. All right, so let's move on with our show, folks. You know, I mentioned this on the show the other day. I was on MSNBC. Literally like 20 minutes before they announced that missiles were headed to Syria, and I had this really eerie sinking feeling that as every single media person, expert, host, to some degree or another, just immediately fell into line with this idea of this is making him presidential, this is something we need to do, we gotta drop the bombs, then the magic box happens, things are gonna turn out okay. And so it is, this booking these two folks became even that much more appropriate, and we'll discuss in a minute, but I wanna bring out the person who made it possible for me to be sitting on that show, and sitting here, and basically, anywhere I sit, she made it possible. Ladies and gentlemen, Janine Garofalo.
This path, this lucrative path. So, Nikki, you're welcome.
All right, let me just come sit here. I'm not.
He still stammers.
And then when the other guests come up, then do I shoot?
No, no, we're just going to sit here.
Okay.
And let me just also say this, because it's also apropos as we start to contemplate, you know, the idea. I mean, people woke up to the idea, oh, he's the president. We could get into another war. That the in the lead up to 2003, there was literally as many people as you could count on your hand who were allowed to go on television and represent a perspective other than we should be invading Iraq. And Jeanine Garofalo was, as far as I could tell, the most prominent person to do so. She will shake her head and say no. But it took a tremendous amount of courage. I could see firsthand the what was involved in that, and it took a tremendous amount of courage. And so I just wanted to say that because I've said it in the past, but I want to say it again.
Well, that's very, very kind of you. And again, you give me too much credit, because the reason that they only allowed a handful of people on to have a counter view about the illegal invasion of Iraq was those that could be easily mocked and marginalized, who are in the entertainment industry, and then also female, which that's two strikes. But it wasn't that anyone thought I was a great guest. It was just like, oh, how can we get so much vitriol coming at this perspective? I know, have somebody who is, on a TV show or something like that.
But you knew that.
I didn't know at the beginning how horrible it was going to go. I didn't realize that the backlash from a segment of the population for doing nothing wrong, pointing out the flaws in the plan to go into Iraq. Oh my goodness, the backlash one could get. I mean, others got it worse than me, the Dixie Chicks being an example of that. But then when I realized how bad it was, I couldn't not do, I was kind of dug in, but it was— It was not pleasant. I'm not one of those people that doesn't care what people think of me. In fact, validation from others defines me. I honestly need—
You're doing a great job, Jeanine. Thank you.
You know what's so sad that we don't have the soundboard of O'Reilly for—
Really? I brought that specifically to annoy you.
Here it comes.
Got it.
What's important? Oh, wait a second.
No. Mike, get my pipe up.
From Those Who Trespass, the audiobook of Bill O'Reilly.
Wait, do it again.
I don't know if people from the old Majority Report remember how much it would annoy you when I would use it.
No, the soundboard would annoy me, but the O'Reilly thing always made people laugh.
Yes.
Very hard. Him reading his own audiobook.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
That's on the O'Reilly character, the hero character who had an Irish last name, talking to a woman of the night, a woman of ill repute.
Does she have an ugly purse?
Of course. And all right, so with that said, I want to bring out our next guest so that we can have a good conversation about where we were, where we are, where we're going. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the author of multiple books, including his last one is, The Clown Ass?
Insane Clown President.
Insane Clown President.
Or Clown Ass.
Clown Ass
President. What's going on with you, man? It was the Clown Ass President. I saw it.
Best-selling author, writer from Rolling Stone magazine, Matt Taibbi. Let's put it up here. I'm sorry. Clown ass?
Insane clown ass
president. All right, you gotta pull this thing right up. All right, so guys, I was mentioning this, I did the lead-in when we were backstage. The last time the three of us were in a studio, it was a little bit smaller than this, but it was probably over 10 years ago, and George W. Bush was the president, and
it's probably 2003.
Well, four. I think his Air America started almost 2004, almost to the day April 1st, 14 years ago or something. 13 years. 2004. And how reminiscent, I mean, just over the past couple of days, Matt, give me your sense of the reaction to us bombing, I should not say Syria, because we've been doing that. But the Syrian administration, if you will, or regime.
I mean, to me, it feels completely different because the Iraq situation had such a long run-up. I mean, the Syrian story wasn't even the biggest story of the day until it happened. You know, I think that's the characteristic of the Trump era, is that you have to keep checking your Twitter every 2 minutes to see what's actually happening in the world, and you know. Whereas we had a long time to consider Iraq, this just happened.
Yeah, that's true. It is amazing. And maybe in some ways, maybe that's why the media responded with such, there was no time to contemplate how they were going to line up in many respects. I mean, am I the only one who noticed that with the media? Or you guys, I mean, was there any break from that sort of, I guess, monolithic, this is something that needs to be done for America?
Well, I feel like that there's no good options. That's a popular phrase. No good options here. There's no good options. But I just spit. Sorry. They can't see me at home. Right?
No.
Okay. There is a difference in that I don't think people are as willing to embrace this presidency as quickly, and I don't feel that there will be as much of a backlash for those who don't agree with this presidency. Because I feel like there's still a state of, oh, what next? Like when you said just checking for the latest news soundbite, it's with dread. It's with great dread. And I'm sure there are some of you, or I know I have, I don't pay attention to the news as much as I used to because it hurts to. It's so emotionally overwhelming that even though there was the dread and the horror then, this is even, I think, even worse because of the type of person the election was stolen for this time, which also, and there's also much more activity in the street, much more, many more people paying attention, and for the protests or rallies that go on, you know, those not my president shirts, I really feel like it should say not a president. And I mean that sincerely, it's not a president, and I feel like no one in the international community sees him as such. And I think, does that make sense? I don't think I've articulated what I mean very well, but it's the same but different.
Yeah, and I think it is a good point about the lead up, and I think that's true. And I think the fact that nobody sees him, that foreign leaders actually look at him as such a farce, that it actually is helpful. Because he's not in this middle, somebody described it to me last night, it's like, you know, it's like when you see a drunk driver swerving, everybody sort of hangs back. As opposed to the guy, like, you don't realize they're completely wasted and they just veer into oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
There's a sense like other leaders are just up there. King Abdullah was just like, yeah, what are you gonna do?
It's really funny if you watch the Russian reaction to it. Almost universally, there were people saying, well, we understand he has political problems and that he had to do this. Which, which, as a person who lived in Russia for a long time, I remember there's this weird psychology over there where if you get onto a crowded tram or a subway car and somebody who's completely drunk steps onto the car, everybody clears a path and gives him a seat. And they say, can't you see that he's not feeling well? You know, they'll even ask an old lady or a pregnant woman to get up.
That's what your book should be, the follow-up. Can't you see that he's not feeling well?
And I think there's sort of the same sympathy for this insane lunatic who, you know, is now in the White House and, oh, can't you see that, you know, he's got problems. So,
and the sympathy for Melania. Which I had to. No. I do feel like there is.
Is it not Melania?
I don't know. Melania, you know who I meant.
The first lady.
The first lady, yes. who at least caught a break pretending that she wants to stay in New York for her son's sake. Anything to put some distance between them. I mean, that's the one good thing I'm sure that came out of it for her is
right.
I can pretend that my son comes first in this. And stay in a different home.
Right.
Than the one. Entirely different city.
And he's not even coming back to New York, right?
He goes to Mar-a-Lago. I don't know if she goes to Mar-a-Lago or not. I would think that she has to stay his weekends because he has play dates and he has soccer.
Did you see the video where they're getting off the plane and they walk down the steps and it's great because and then there's a pause and then you just see her walking around to go to the other side.
Well, she thought it wasn't they weren't supposed to go like this. That kind of a marriage is a social. It's an understanding between two people of this is a finite amount of time. I've signed a prenup, but I will get something. But now it's like, oh, who would have factored this in?
Right. Not these day years.
Even he did not think he was going to win this, and he certainly did not. But the look on his face, as you may recall from that night in November, that's the most contemplative, I suppose you could say. He was as sorry as anyone. Happen. This was all just for whatever he was going to get out of that, and he could always say, I should have won, I would have won, and he would have floated a story that it was stolen for Hillary, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was in the same way George W. Bush. He was just supposed to own sports teams and make enormous profits from shady business deals, and that's what that 7 minutes on his face on 9/11 was, for Christ's sake.
This is going to set back my painting career.
Yes. Outsider art, you know? His paintings look like the kind of paintings that are found at institutions, you know what I mean? If they're given somehow credits, if you put them in a gallery, it's like, oh, look at this gentleman who was incarcerated before he did that. That's what his paintings look like.
But
taken out of that context, they're very, very weak.
Yeah. What were we talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think we were saying...
We were talking about what is art? That's art. What is art?
Now, Matt, my understanding is you are a spy for Russia. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I say that, of course, in half jest. But let's talk about the whole Russia thing, because there's sort of like a dual track of narrative that goes on that are almost... That implicate each other on some level, but on another level are just sort of chugging along, and depending on which cable news show you watch, one is more prominent than the other. One exists, almost to the exclusion of the other in some respects. Give me your take on this, because I think, you know, we here have been fairly, I don't think that when we've been accused of Russia phobia or hysteria, but I think, let's hear your take. I think people know our take.
See, I was kind of hoping to get through this without talking about this. I think...
Hold on one second, please. I've got that right here. It is...
Smooth stone.
Yeah, this is the way, it's a new, oh.
I don't think so!
Oh, man. What else do you have in there? I'm stalling.
Do the mom one.
Only God, no other king.
Ash cross, let the eagle soar.
Do you miss the Bush years?
Yeah, this is
sort of
before that. Yes.
I don't know anybody who has more nostalgia for the Bush years than Steve.
My iPad, until Jeff Sessions sings in a barbershop quartet as he is disenfranchising black voters, Ashcroft is still my guy.
Yeah, whenever I get depressed, I just cue up. You know, Bushisms and there's an 8.5 minute one that you can't survive.
Putting food on your family.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get fooled. We're going to get fooled again. Those weapons of mass destruction got me around here somewhere. all right. Well, Don, I mean, you don't have to break down the Russia thing as much as just give me your sense you don't have to tell us the sure. ins and outs, but just how it plays politically and whether or not there's some value in it in and of itself or from a political standpoint in terms of inhibiting the Trump administration.
Well, my whole problem with this is that if you listen to Trump, when he talks to his audience, all he talks about is the media is against me and there's establishment bias against me and they're coming up with fake news. So he's extremely unpopular right now, but the one thing that could rescue him is, you know, if the Russia story came up the wrong way. In other words, if all these accusations turned out to be true, and he was able to, you know, accurately turn around and say they cooked up this fake story about me, then that would raise him, you know, his political profile. And so that's why I think people have to be careful, you know, when we do this Russia story, to sort of not be over our skis with it, you know,
right.
and to go step by step and say, what do we exactly know at the moment? What can we actually say? And not play this game that we do play in the media, which is we'll allow somebody like BuzzFeed to publish that crazy dossier, right? But the New York Times won't touch it. They won't publish it, but they'll refer to it. And everybody knows that everyone's going to link to it and read it anyway. And so there are stories where in the past journalists wouldn't have touched parts of the story, but these days we're just going whole hog and running with the entire thing. And I think that's dangerous in the Trump era to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that does make sense to me. And I think, you know, it's enough, I think, at this point to say the head of the FBI has said that there's an investigation, which I think is enough for political purposes going forward. And I mean, I think that there's obviously something there, but I don't know if it's that Donald Trump is a Putin puppet. I think he's, I mean, I don't know that he could think of concentrate long enough
right.
to execute even like a puppet move. Like,
but I think he's a default puppet. It's not even a conspiracy. It's not even I think that complex. Who's a guy, if he were the leader of America, would be the worst thing for America, but quite helpful to Russia.
Sure.
This idiot. You know, I mean, like, this is great. This works out great.
But that story is an order of magnitude different from. He got in a room with a bunch of Russians and they conspired to change the policy.
Well, they're not going to tell him what's going to happen. You know, he just thinks it's about real estate or business or something. Also, he, much like me, just needs someone to like them. You know what I mean? Like, you like me, I like you. You know, so, you know, you pretend, you flatter. You've seen 300. Hubris, ego, easy to taunt, easy to trick. Xerxes. I'm talking about Xerxes. That's what Leonidas had going for him. You taunt, you trick. Xerxes, and you know what happens.
What?
You didn't see 300.
I didn't see 300. Is that a movie?
Well, you know what it's a movie. But it's based on history, the Thermopylae, whatever, the hot gates.
The hot gates?
Jeez. I know you know what it is, you just don't know it in the moment. But Gerard Butler.
Actor.
Historical
Mike actor.
Mike Fassbender.
Great guy.
From history.
Six packs. Abs. Any, you know what I'm talking
right.
about.
Right. Well, who is Xerxes in the metaphor?
I'm just saying Xerxes was easy to provoke because he needs to be number one. He needs
right,
to be
right.
Worshipped. And so the 300, once they were safely within the hot gates, until they were betrayed by the humpback gentleman, who wanted to fight. He wanted to fight. He had one good arm.
This is a new podcast right here.
But what I'm saying simply.
Can we talk about Braveheart? I saw that one.
Well, yes, what's the common denominator of history? It's always human flaws, right? Human flaws. It's just people. from Rome, you know, Herodotus will tell you that, the father of history, also known as the father of lies. But if you flatter someone, somebody who's a useful idiot, I hate to use titles like that from some book right. that was out before, but I think that Russian people are like, what, this guy can be useful. It doesn't have to be that complex. You know, like Silvio Berlusconi, and I know you pointed that out in others, but he's a very similar figure to Berlusconi.
Sure.
And I feel like, you know, it doesn't have to be as conspiratorial. Now, on the Russian side, there may be some deeper thinking going on.
Sure.
But
absolutely.
I don't know that when Trump, if he met with Russians, and I do think there is a there with this. I do think there's no way he won legitimately. And that's another reason why the Russian fake news or wherever it was coming from, Macedonia, you can only try that shit on right-wingers, because they'll believe anything but the truth. You can't do that to swing it for Hillary, because we're more critical thinkers. That's why we're Democrats or liberals or progressives.
But isn't one of the primary parts of this whole theory was that the fake news was aimed at the Bernie people?
Well, that's a part of it. What I'm saying is, that's different from the Trump news, where they just want to click, or that was the idea.
I couldn't vote for Hillary because she and her husband are serial killers. I'm sorry.
I know!
For me, you blame it on me, but I'm not able to do that.
For me, it was the Parkinson's. It was the Parkinson's.
I know, I mean, you saw
how do you still have such bloodlust when you have Parkinson's?
That's the amazing part.
Don't get me started on David Foster rolled up in a carpet somewhere.
Drag the body.
But do you think we're needing the fake news?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't think that the fake news story is in tandem with other. You know, never underestimate the resources of cruelty, willful ignorance, xenophobia, homophobia. All those things work so well for Republicans and have for years. They tap into that and they use it. But also, they are the vast minority. You know, I mean, like they. I don't think Republicans have legitimately won since Bobby Kennedy was shot. I really believe that. I don't with gerrymandering and all kinds of things, because I don't think they have the issues that benefit anyone. They have to lie. They have to use fear and things like that. Have I made any sense?
Yes.
I just think there is a there with the Russian thing. Although I don't believe that we should be so against Russia like the evil empire and Red Dawn, the movie Red Dawn. Let's not get into that. We don't
have to. Wait, can I ask about a quick question?
Wolverines on my.
Do you think though that without regardless of the connection, do you think that modern American politics is looking more like Russian politics, just in the sense of like this fusion of like petrochemicals, social conservatism, and sort of some type of interest in having a strongman kind of figure? Like, regardless of the connection, is there some type of
parallel
there?
I mean, there are definitely some parallels between Putin and Trump, for sure. You know, having watched the rise of Putin living there, I think that was definitely a reaction to this kind of widespread loss of pride that people felt. People felt that they also hated globalism, you know, during back then, and Putin was a figure who made certain kinds of Russians feel proud of themselves. For the
and there's
first
like
time.
An anti-Muslim component to that too, like what they did in Chechnya and stuff to
right,
get his poll numbers.
Of course,
But none of this is new. None of this is new. It's as it ever was. You can always tap into the fears of a certain segment of the population,
sure.
And they always will want to be behind some strong man type character.
Well, one thing is new, and actually Alex Perrine wrote a piece the other day about how the long right-wing grift has sort of bubbled over or exploded. And he writes that there was a time where a lot of that stuff, the nationalism, the racism, even to some extent, sort of, I guess, right-wing populism, not so much economic, but sort of... was always used by the establishment Republicans as fuel for their electoral engine. And now, most of the Republicans believe it. So it used to be the way the congressman got elected was to use that stuff. And now, the congressmen themselves believe that, and the president does.
That's why you see this dichotomy between like the kind of old school National Review, George Will Republicans who were like, hey, we were just kidding about that. We were just using that to get people elected. And then, you know, now they don't understand that.
I actually am racist.
Yeah,
here's you. I don't like black people. This is an electoral tactic. My conviction.
I mean, that's an amazing thing to have happened, which I feel like outside of the margins of the commentariat in this country, it was not noticed that that was happening. I mean, you know, I was wrong about Donald Trump becoming president, but I wasn't wrong about his appeal to Republicans, basically because I have the vast, for most of my adult life, listened to right-wing radio and just seen, you know, as in 2008, you had congressmen calling up Rush Limbaugh to apologize for not sort of towing the line for a talk radio show host. And that's really fucked up. And it seemed to just go under the radar for an extended period of time. I'm not even sure if it's fully there. Like,
yeah, no, I think on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, they're still in shock about what happened. They still don't realize the extent of the revolt on both sides. You know, I think the Democrats are still completely, you know, the party leadership is in total denial about what happened with the Sanders campaign. They chalk it up to, see, the way people in Washington always look at it, they always blame it on the person in Washington. They never see it as a movement of people outside of the Capitol. And so they say, oh, it's this nutty Bernie Sanders.
That fucking charismatic ancient Jew.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Whereas, you know, the reality is that somebody was waiting for somebody, you know, there were millions of people who were waiting for this to happen, and the party is just not, and they're still in denial about it, and I think that's part of what my response to the Russia thing is. I think it's just forestalling this period of self-examination that the Democratic Party has to go through, and hasn't yet.
When you say they, like, who is the they there? Because, I mean, Chuck Schumer, I don't know if he gets why Bernie was popular, but it's clear to me that he gets that Bernie is popular. Like, I mean, there's story after story of him going in and whatever he's doing, he basically just looks at Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and says, are you guys okay with this? And then, I mean, that's what we're seeing. I don't think that Chuck Schumer has suddenly, you know, realized, like, hey, maybe it was a problem for me to brag in October about the deal I was going to make with Paul Ryan and Clinton to repatriate corporate taxes. But I think he at least now realizes, like, I got to just check with these guys before I do anything. But it doesn't feel like the broader establishment. But I don't know who that is, except for people who are never going to, who just don't want to understand that, because...
Well, because their whole political raison d'etre depends on, I mean, look, the whole Sanders thing is based on the idea that you can't take money from all these people
right.
And be on the side of ordinary people. We either got to choose between the money or people, all right? And the Democrats just aren't ready to stop taking the money. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Right?
I think that's true, but who are the Democrats? Like who is it that's not, I mean, Bernie's saying you've got to make a choice. And who is he saying this to?
You know, Chuck Schumer, you know, people who have been running the party for ages, you know.
But I don't want to make a choice.
Can I say that? Well, if they don't, you know, Republicans get so much money from big energy and stuff like that. So what are Democrats? What, everybody's always picking on the Democrats when they are, in some ways, the last firewall between total loss of reproductive rights and total loss of LGBTQ rights. And also, they won. Al Gore won. Hillary Clinton won. John Kerry won. And so, always in the postmortem, still, people are piling shit on the Democrats, and I don't think it's fair. And also,
Ross Feingold did not win. And that is true. And the thing is, though, is that Russ Feingold was the only Senate candidate running this time around who was not taking that money. And so I don't know that the answer is as easy as that. He got outspent 7-1, and he lost. And, you know, it wasn't like he wasn't raising money. It's just that somebody can come in and raise seven times that.
And also there's gerrymandering in play and the rolling back of the Voting Rights Act. So all these things are stacked against Democrats as it is. And also in the postmortem after Donald Trump didn't win, people keep talking, well, these disenfranchised people, they don't like NAFTA, globalization. I defy you to find me one fucking Trump voter who can explain NAFTA to you. Yeah. You know, it's not
is
about
there anybody
issues.
In the audience
it's
that voted for Trump?
It's not about being left behind. But I'm serious. If they cared about these things, they would have gone for Sanders. They would have gone, they would worship Elizabeth Warren. They would, to some degree, the progressive wing, the Democratic Party. If they don't do that, I can only make one deduce one thing, that they are as base, and it is all about like the it, unrestrained it, about xenophobia and all the bad things. That really bothers me when the Trump voter is given the benefit of the doubt for thinking.
Well, hold on, wait a second. Now, but in fair though, there's a lot of Trump voters, and I mean, Matt was out there meeting, I think, a lot of those people who were like, if it's not Bernie Sanders, then it'll be Trump. And
yeah, I mean, I talked to every single Trump event that I went to. You know, Trump talked a lot on the campaign trail about money. That was
right,
that was,
but there was also other overarching. So does Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and other people. But the main things these people chanted were build the wall, lock her up, and beating up anybody who disagreed with them, and the media's against us.
But not all of them.
But a great.
Yes, no, no. Because we're only, let's be clear here. We're talking about maybe 10% of the Trump voter, if that, of the 60.
No, I disagree.
5%. It doesn't matter.
He means 5 or 10% that's persuadable, not.
Yes, but we're talking. We talk about people who are persuadable, who might have been interested. I think we're talking about a margin within, you know, because most of those people voted for Mitt Romney. The vast majority of them voted for John McCain.
Hello.
And would have voted for anybody. And so, but Matt, just tell us that notion, and also, but do address the Russ Feingold thing, because I'm curious what your take is on that.
No, I'm just, Trump talked a lot about the same things, oddly enough, that Sanders did. You know, he basically, one of his main points in the stump over and over again was to talk about how Jeb Bush was getting $100 million and that, do you think Jeb Bush is going to help make your pharmaceutical costs lower when he has Woody Johnson as his campaign chairman? You know, from Johnson & Johnson. Now, of course, he doesn't mean it, but right. that was a key part of his rhetoric. And the idea that he was different, that he was not part of the Republican Party structure, was a winning point for him. I don't think there's any way he can deny that. I mean, there were other things clearly that were elements to his success, and probably even more important than that. But that clearly was a phenomenon on both sides of the aisle. This idea that the people are tired of an unresponsive government that they felt was dominated by these oligarchical
interests.
I disagree with you.
I think again, you're giving them the benefit of the doubt, and they would have gone for Sanders. But the thing that moved them the most, like the thing that moved the Tea Party the most, was based in race. And also those that won't, they will not take health care from a black man, God damn it. You know what I mean? Like They would rather have no health care. And they were so mad about health care coming from Obama. Why? What? It's visceral. It's base. And you know what I mean? Like it's, and look at the people at those Trump rallies behind him. Those fate, it's.
But I think, listen, I think that's true. They wouldn't take it from a black guy. But now that the black guy's out of the picture, they clearly do want it.
Yes,
and
that's
so,
what I'm saying.
But my point is not to defend the typical Trump voter. My point is, and I think what Matt's saying is that there is these people on some level are responsive to a message. For many of them, it may get crowded out if it's delivered by a black person or a woman, frankly. But I think the point is that the message itself resonates, even if it's delivered by someone like Donald Trump, who had no legitimacy to deliver such a message. Like, the fact that he just came out of his mouth was almost enough for them to be like, all right, I'll take that billionaire from New York He's the guy who cares about people just because he said it.
We're agreeing that he's a billionaire now?
Well,
but part of what Trump's success, look, his big pitch was there's an establishment, a political establishment that's been entrenched for generations that hasn't done anything for you, the ordinary person, and I'm going to help you. And it was ridiculous coming from Donald Trump because, of course, he's never interacted with an ordinary person in his life. But one thing he was able to do is that he was able to the antagonism that people, you know, in the press had for him allowed him to portray himself as a man of the people because we were part of the hated establishment.
But so also we solved his credibility. Bernie Sanders faced antagonism as well from the press.
And he did well.
But what I'm saying is the Trump voter didn't respond to that type of message from a legitimate source like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders as two examples. What they responded to was the most vitriolic of what he was saying.
I think all I can tell you is that we don't know because Sanders wasn't in the general election, but there's a lot of indication. Chris Hayes went on a tour with him, I think the last one was in West Virginia, and town halls. And Hayes went out, I hope I'm not telling the story out of turn, but they went out to like an Outback Steakhouse or something.
What the fuck?
Tea. I think it was like an Outback Steakhouse. And Chris said they came in, Bernie Sanders, senator from Vermont, into an Outback Steakhouse, I think in West Virginia. Person after person lined up, some crying, just to shake Chris Hayes' hand. No, Bernie. To shake Bernie Sanders' hand. And Chris was like, it was unbelievable. People coming out of the kitchen. But
in fairness, Bernie in this place was like, we need to build the wall. I'm tired of women and black people who are so uppity. We have universal health care, and Barack Obama was a disgrace.
He was just waiting for a chance to do his impression. Just waiting.
That's right. You gotta find your angles. You should know that of all people.
So, I mean, I think like the... and this debate is going to go on, and it's not going to, I don't think this is one that's ever going to be, frankly, I mean, this is one of the things that sort of frustrates me about this debate. It's not going to get resolved. It's only going to whatever side that subscribes to these questions is going to win.
What about Warren versus Trump?
And it's not going, what?
What about Warren versus Trump?
I think.
To a degree.
I think that's a possibility. I think there's every indication that Bernie Sanders is, I wouldn't say he's going to run because it's too early to say that, but he's definitely keeping the door wide open to the people. I think, you know, one of the things that is clear is that, and you know, Matt, you wrote a piece that only went up to 4 weeks ago, very detailed, which is like, in Trump era, might as well have been like 10 years ago.
Right. It's like dog years, but yeah.
But just even over the course of that month, what we saw the Democrats do to get a filibuster, losing only 4 votes, is... What's that? And guess who's got to change his password?
Social Security, 123.
That's right. I knew making my Gmail, my Social Security number at gmail.com, huge mistake, and I couldn't figure out how to change it.
Exactly.
But. The Democrats seem to be getting it, at least in terms on some level of a resistance. They haven't quite gotten to, although there's an introduction of expand Social Security, 150, 160 Democratic congressmen and women have signed on to expanding Social Security. And that's the kind of stuff I think that we need to see, not necessarily to the exclusion of the Russia stuff, but in parallel to it. And I mean, I don't know, we just got a couple of minutes left. What do you think about going forward? Hopes? No hopes.
No.
No.
I should have asked that question with 20
but
seconds.
It's been encouraging the amount of people that have reacted and like the historical rallies, protests. That is very, very encouraging. And to see people so committed to paying attention and getting involved, I think that.
Yeah, that was one of the things, you know, they sent me to do a story about Trump's first month. And one of the things that was amazing to find out was that the Democrats were kind of ready to do this strategy of only opposing, I guess it was Tom Price, that they were going to put all their eggs in that basket of like stopping Price because he had once said something bad about Medicare, and they thought that was going to be their trump card. But then they went home and there were like people in the streets everywhere telling them they want, you know, them to fight everybody. And it was an instance of the party saying, wow, there's like lots of actual people out there that want us to do our jobs, and that was a good thing, you know. I think that's encouraging.
What do you make of 86? Now, this is just one poll. It's not who knows how, but 86% of the people who called their senators were women. Is it just? I mean, what? What do you make of that?
We got to figure out what's going on.
Well, don't you think that like, a lot of times women, I think, can, I think also historically, have been far more involved with social issues, and I don't know whether it has to do with actually birthing children or being the primary caretaker still to this day of children, and therefore being more connected to these social issues. But I think women historically have always been much more proactive in the streets fighting for social justice. In the case of Kellyanne Conway. Then I think it's okay.
Mindy, do you want to say something about Kellyanne Conway? No, okay.
At least she has the decency to look dead. She has the decency to present as a corpse. Well, after that picture of her with her feet tucked up underneath her, I should hope so, sitting on the couch that way.
Yeah.
Now, I just got to ask a question to the organizers. Does that mean there's 5 minutes after those 2 minutes?
No.
No.
So what's the point of that fun?
So,
I think so, yeah. Or our lives, maybe. I don't know.
That's the doomsday clock. You guys got two minutes and 20 seconds.
All right, well, I mean, so just last words here, because I just also want to just do a little bit of housekeeping. But, so no hope and hope. Is that where we're at?
Yes, I think that people at all levels is very, very encouraging.
Matt Leck, hope or no hope?
Hope.
So young, look at him, so young. He's such an angel.
Not necessarily for the Democrats.
Oh, come on, leave the Democrats. And also, I like Hillary Clinton. I want somebody to give her a break. Stop picking on Hillary Clinton. She's devoted her life to public service since college, goddamn it. She's brilliant.
Kelly, I gotta say, it's gonna be so fun watching Matt be disabused of all his optimism over the years to come. Kelly, hope or no hope?
Hope, but a little discouraged that Matt Taibbi says no hope because he's kind of the one writing the stuff. Give people hope, so you might wanna.
The only thing I care about is that not be Curt Schilling as the next president.
President Mark Cuban.
That actually doesn't sound that bad right now.
What?
Hope, sure.
Yeah.
Hope in the face of adversity.
Folks, listen. Yeah, sorry, I had to torture you with this. Next show, there's going to be another podcast. It's stuff they don't want you to know.
Like Sergey Lavrov.
We're going to be in, we'll hang out front here to meet all you guys. We've got special gifts for everybody who's come to the show until we run out.
But underneath someone's there's a pair of car keys.
And if you find them, please deliver them to the bar up front. We forgot them. Thank you so, so much. And I thank Matt